The first out transgender person that I met was Kate Bornstein. It was 1997 or so, and I was the co-chair of the Coalition Against Homophobia at Whitman College, a small rural liberal arts college in southeastern Washington state. Kate Bornstein was on a book tour promoting her book, Gender Outlaw, Men, Women, and the Rest of Us, which she had published in 1994. This was 20 years ago. Trans people are so much more visible now, much more accepted now in many places, and so much more in the news. But in the mid-1990s, Kate was very rare, an out public trans person. And she is a firecracker. She laughs from her soul, and she has a kind of witty kindness that I adored. She loves you, but she is not going to put up with your nonsense. Ain't nobody got time for that. Kate was assigned a male gender identity at birth, but as she has written, she didn't think she was a woman, but she knew for sure she wasn't a man. She tried all kinds of other ways to fix herself, like our blue crayon trying to be her wrapping instead of herself. That included a sojourn into Scientology, of all things, and an attempt to escape the body into this other place of consciousness and pure mind. Our theme this month is embodiment, and that's what got me thinking about Kate and Sean and Andrea and Barb and Sunshine and Alex and Chris and so many of my trans friends and colleagues and acquaintances, and about some of you who are trans or gender nonconforming, and about you who have shown such grace and steadfast love to your children and grandchildren, and to coworkers who've transitioned into their true identities, who've taken off the false label and become free to be themselves. Thought about what it means to take ownership of your body back from society, to say, this is mine, not yours. I name it, I define it, it's mine, not yours. One thing I can tell you, life should be your lover. Help you discover your reason for being. Soon you will be seeing what you're all about. Living in the shadows, you'll never find it. That finally was what Kate Bornstein did. She made life her lover and claimed and named herself. And when she visited our small college campus in 1997, she was the first out trans person that many of us had met, not just me. I got to go to dinner with her and told her how much I loved her book, and she was great, funny, clever. I suspect it was because I was raised as a Unitarian Universalist, I hope so, or maybe it was because I had long flirted in the in-between spaces, between theist and atheist, telling folks it depended on my mood and what we meant when we said God, on whether or not which word I would use, or between gay and straight, why can't I just be attracted to whom I'm attracted to? And what are all these labels about anyway? Or maybe it was because of all my step and half siblings. Depending on how you count, I'm the oldest of two, the middle of three, or the fifth of six. And so I guess I just always knew that identity is always more contextual and less rigid. It's more fluid than we think it is. So for whatever reason, I never really struggled to get it. There are folks who identify as men and folks who identify as women and folks who don't identify as either of those genders, and how people identify themselves may or may not be congruent with their anatomy or how society sees them. I learned about it and I thought, okay, cool. A few years ago, my friend and colleague Sean Dennison asked me to introduce them at a big, important lecture they were giving before other Unitarian Universalist ministers. Sean said, I want you to do it because I want to be inclusive of my trans identity, but not just about that. I want it to be about me as a person. It was an awfully nice thing to say. And I know that many of us feel that way. You be you. You tell me who you are, and I'll believe you. You want me to call you by a different name than when we first met? I will. You want me to use the pronoun she or he or they to describe you? I will. If I forget, remind me, but I will. Because we trust that the person before us knows themselves better than we do. But for some folks, it isn't that easy. Even for some of us, it's a little bit harder. Even for many trans folks, it isn't easy. Society's messages about gender binaries and gender roles are very, very strong. And religion's messages about this are very strong. And habits can be hard to break. So many of us are used to thinking that there are two types of people, men and women. I mean, what is it that we ask when a baby is born? We say, what is it, boy or girl? One of my friends said in answer to this question, well, it isn't an iguana. So if you're having a hard time with this, I encourage you to do the same thing that my trans and gender non-conforming friends do for themselves, they try to do each day. Believe trans people. Believe them. Trust that they know themselves better than you do. And if you are trans, this is for you too. Trust yourself, your deepest heart. You know yourself better than others know you, even if they tell you otherwise. Soon you will be seeing what you are all about. Living in the shadows, you'll never find out. Or as Janet Mock says, you are on purpose. I am on purpose. Back to 1997. The day after Kate's visit and speech on campus, and it was fabulous, I was having a conversation with one of my professors. He was a philosophy professor, and he specialized in medieval philosophy, Aquinas, Augustine, folks from the 5th to the 15th century. He'd studied to be a priest, but he'd fallen in love with a woman. He was a devout Catholic, and he didn't get it. I used the word she to refer to Kate. Even though Kate identifies as non-binary, she uses she as a pronoun and not they, as some do. And my professor objected. He said, well, if the chromosomes are XX, then it's she, but if it's XY, then it's he. And I tried to explain that biological sex and gender identity are not the same thing, but he wouldn't accept it. The truth was, actually, he had a hard time accepting that who you were attracted to, which is to say sexual orientation, was totally separate from gender and sex. He struggled to get that men might be attracted to men and women to women, let alone that men might be attracted to both men and women, let alone all over again, that men and women might not be fixed categories or the only options. I was a 19-year-old college student, and I couldn't quite convince him, but maybe I opened his heart just a little bit. And I should say as an aside here that it's a good thing he taught philosophy and not biology, because chromosomal assignment is not so simple. There are variations beyond XX and XY, and depending on whether or not the SRY gene attached to the Y chromosome is active or not, a person with XY chromosomes may be born with female anatomy and female hormones. Moreover, as many as one in every 50 people, 2% of the population, can be classified as intersex. They have chromosomes or hormones or anatomy or and or other genetic traits which don't line up exactly on the same side as the imaginary line of gender. And it is an imaginary line. That's what my professor just didn't get. He believed that gender and sex were the same thing, but both gender and sex have fuzzy lines. They move and they shift. And what it means to be a man or a woman is different in different cultures and in different times of history, and we don't all fit in neat boxes. Yes, for many folks, our gender identity and our assigned biological sex matches up pretty well, not always perfectly, but pretty well. That's, as Cadison told you, called cisgendered. Trans comes from the Latin on the other side of, or to cross over. Cis is the Latin on the same side of. When it mostly lines up, society is greased for you in this respect. It's easy to assume that it's lined up for everyone, that what it says on the crayons wrapper is the color that they are. How could it be different? That's the way, what it says. But for trans folks, it just doesn't line up. And when they figure this out and they can name it, it's like oxygen. It's coming out of the shadows and learning to breathe. When they say, "This is me," it's liberating and beautiful. Not that it's easy all the time. We often think of trans teens in particular in stereotypical ways as runaways or addicted or troubled with mental health challenges and so forth. But the studies are in, and when trans folks are treated well by their family of origin, their school, and their religious community, if any, they are as healthy and well-adjusted as the population at large. It is the presence of discrimination and fear and shaming and abuse that makes it so dangerous to be a trans person in society. That's the danger, other folks. That's why the work that some of you have done to build welcoming communities in your schools, in colleges, to be supportive parents and grandparents and partners, to be kind and decent, matters so much. We want to normalize decency. That's it. That's our task in this and in so many areas. We want to say, how could anyone see you as anything but beautiful? Flower beds are umbrellas. Umbrellas are rubrics. I support your identification and your disidentification. Just be decent. Believe them when people tell you their story. Assume they know their body better than you do. They know their heart better than you do. Normalize decency. I said before that for cisgendered people, anatomy and gender mostly line up, but that word mostly is important. It's not completely, and not in every case. I have immense gratitude for my trans friends and colleagues and to folks like Kate who pioneers who knew wild roads, who laid down wayside hostels on the journey out of gender stereotypes. Because when we start to break down those boxes and when we push against the walls of gender, we're all more free to be ourselves, to know what we are about. Men can be nurturing. Women can be strong. Hell, you can be strong and nurturing at the same time. We can be ourselves. We can play and move and explore. It's amazing how fast we've shifted, really, when you think about it, isn't it? I mean, how many of you grew up in a time when girls were not allowed to wear pants to school? Think of how far we have come in our lifetimes. And yet the other truth is that the 1940s and 50s were the height of gender roles. The 1920s were looser, more free. Flappers and suffragettes and Oscar Wilde and a kind of joyful freedom. But the Depression and the war and the resurgence of the evangelical tradition shifted that. So we're shifting it back. Violets are from Jupiter. Men and women and the rest of us are from Earth, so maybe we could act like it. The core insight of our liberal faith is that each person is sacred, a holder of inherent worth and dignity, and that each person should, in beloved community of fellow seekers, follow their own conscience and be honest to the best wisdom of their own heart. Our hearts are made wiser by listening to each other's stories, especially the stories of those whom society tries to shunt aside. But in the end, we must be truthful to our core spirit, to the spark of the divine within us. And we all have that spark. I want that spark to burn away the confines of gender rules, to burn away prejudice and misinformation and fear, and to burn away the way that some politicians play on the fear of trans people to get political power. Shame on them. I want that spark to burn away doubt, the doubt that we hold that we are not good enough, that our bodies, our hearts must conform to someone else's rules. To say, I am me, this is me. I want that spark to make us say, I see you as you are, and I love you, and you are beautiful as you are. I want that spark to teach us to say to ourselves, I am a child of God. I am an embodiment of love. I shall become myself, and we shall be glad. This is our prayer, our hope, the work of our bodies and our hearts. As my colleagues Mary Catherine Morin and Jason Shelton have written, we wish for the truth in our hearts to be our guide for every soul to be blessed and made whole. Sometimes we build up a barrier to keep love tightly bound, but may it be so, a bright new day is dawning when love will not divide. Those words come from a song we know as Standing on the Side of Love, but the composer, Jason Shelton, has asked us all to change the words, to say that we are answering the call of love. It's the same number of syllables, words. And he's asked us to do this for two reasons. Because first, some bodies don't stand. And inclusive metaphors are better when we can use them. And second, because love doesn't have a side. It has a call to be a little less self-congratulatory and a little more responsive. It pulls us ever forward to a new day, to deeper understandings. Don't think that we are right and they are wrong. Think, wouldn't it be great if we all answered the call of love? My prayer for you, whether you are trans or cis, a man, a woman, or the rest of us, whether you are still learning or you think you are getting it, my prayer for all of us is that we honor the beauty and the divine spark within us, in our bodies, in our hearts, in our souls, that we trust the wisdom in each of us, and that we get to be us, truly, honestly, without fear, us. Let your light shine. Be you, do you, for you are loved as you are meant to be, as your true and beautiful self, your own name, your own heart, your own life. I pray for us all that we will be free, that we will all be free and rejoice in the gift of our lives. May it be so. And let us sing. Arise in body and or in spirit, answering the call of love. Thank you. Extinguish our chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry with us until we are together again. And I invite you to, if you wish, join hands with those near you for our blessings. From Frederick Gillis, may the love which overcomes all differences, which heals all wounds, which puts to flight all fears, which reconciles all who are separated, be in us and among us, now and always. We'll sing together our blessing. Go your way in peace. We'll sing it through twice.